coming up now on 8:12. Good morning. Joining me now on the phone, Summit County Community Development Director Pat Puck. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So tell us, anything new come into the office since we last talked?
Actually, we just had a new application arrive yesterday morning. It's a conditional use permit, Mountain Trails has submitted an application to move their administrative offices into a new location, and the property that they're looking to make that transfer to is out on Highway 224. It's a small, older, historic home that sits just to the north of where Contender Bicycles are, the Little Red Barn, just north of the Catholic Church and across the highway from Temple Har Shalom. The proposal is to process this conditional use permit so that they would be able, Mountain Trails, to occupy that space for their administrative functions. And I also believe the plan is to share that space with Summit Lands Conservancy. Neither of those organizations hold regular business hours or generate a lot of public traffic. And so they're thinking that that might be an appropriate fit. So we'll be getting that in front of the Planning Commission here. My guess would be in early March to see if we can get that out to the public and get that one processed. But that's the only new application that we've gotten in since the last time we chatted.
Yeah, so what's in there currently?
I think it's just a single-family residence. The Ivers family own that building. It was previously used as a residence and where the Ivers balloon operations were based out of. So I don't know specifically if it's being occupied at the moment. And certainly part of our review would be to make sure that any necessary code requirements from that transition from a residence to administrative offices were met. And that's really what the purpose of the process is for.
Okay. Let's see. What's coming up next on the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission meeting Tuesday?
Boy, we got a lot going on. We've got two items that pertain to Silver Creek Village out on Highway 40 and Interstate 80. We have got a public hearing for the Mountain Life Church in Silver Creek for an expansion of their facilities, both in the size of the church, the sanctuary, and their parking lot. We're going to be going back, holding a public hearing on the Basin-Snyderville Development Code, Master Plan Development section of the code. And then we're going to end the night with a public hearing for a proposed plat amendment over in Quarry Mountain Ranch, where a property owner is looking to adjust their development envelope within their lot. So quite a bit going on there.
So let's talk a little just about the timing on this Mountain Life Church expansion. I think they had put something in that it was kind of taken off, and then we made the decision, or the council made the decision, that they were going to use the Church Street option for the Bittner Road Silver Creek connector. Talk about how, I mean, we had to wait for that decision to be made before this application could come forward?
I think they're related topics, but they're not directly tied. The project, the expansion of the church and the parking area would have been able to probably been designed either way, whether the right-of-way was involving the Mountain Life property or not. I think the biggest hurdle that we've been trying to get over with Mountain Life Church is more the technical aspects of the existing original approval, and it goes back well over a decade or more. And when that project was approved, it went through a process by which, through the specially planned area, there were hard boundaries of open space required. Part of what was entitled in that original approval through the SPA was this dedication of open space or open areas that created a hard boundary the ability or the potential ability to expand the building and expand the parking, meet the necessary setbacks, meet the wetland setbacks, was complicated. And I believe we probably have a proposal that, from a code standpoint, black and white, addresses that. I think that was the bigger hurdle, more so than the discussion of the alignment of the Bittner Road extension.
Yeah, will the church get some special consideration because they're helping the county with this extension?
No. The answer to that directly would be no. This isn't part of a negotiation. This isn't a deal point. Again, what is in front of the commission on Tuesday night is a step back with the church and moving forward a plan that was based on their original proposal that goes back probably more than a year. And again, it's really the time associated with really has more to do with overcoming those code hurdles and those old SPA hurdles and what was the most appropriate mechanism to move forward. So in the event that, the county council does move forward and there's the acquisition of land, that's a completely separate discussion, not tied to this.
All right. What's the latest on the windmill farm near Evanston?
Well, the office, our department's been in contact with the project managers. Inyo Renewable Energy is the name of that group. They are in the process right now as we speak of finalizing their engineering. We are anticipating getting applications to start the project, some of the initial earthwork and turbine installation this late spring, early summer. And for folks out there listening who may be unfamiliar with this, last August, the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission approved a conditional use permit for property just about 7 to 10 miles inside the Utah line outside of Evanston to establish upwards to between 30 to 40 large wind-generating windmills. These are the big ones, the 500-foot-tall towers. This project will have the ability to generate energy, put into the grid enough power to power 22,000 homes annually. This is a big, pardon the pun, but this is a really big project. This is a very big deal. Probably, in my estimation, one of the biggest sustainability wins that we've had in the broader community in a very, very long time. And so it looks like we are going to probably begin seeing these things go up this year, which I think is a success not only for the community, not only for Inyo Renewable, but I think everybody wins out of this one.
All right. Let's see. The former Ruby Tuesday space across from the Hampton Inn, was that ever approved then to become this auto rental place?
Yes and no. Yes, from the standpoint that prior to the holidays, the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission had reviewed a request to have the change of use from the restaurant to this rental facility. The process they're in right now is the low-impact permitting process. That has not been approved yet. We're still working on some final details, and they're not probably the most exciting details, but they have more to do with engineering, driveway access, reconciling some of those. But those have not been worked out yet, and so the permit has yet to be issued.
Okay. And then finally, I wanted to ask you about the discussion earlier this week at the county council where they approved a special exception for a septic tank at Silver Creek. We had heard that they will be putting in an advanced septic tank because I think we're dealing with some wetlands in the area. But is it time to start thinking about rewriting that code on septic?
The quick answer to that, Leslie, is absolutely. I had a conversation with Phil Bondurant and Rich Bolo immediately following the meeting that night. It always seems that we're chasing the improvements in the technology that's out there. And on a good note, we are now appearing to be chasing what appears to be leadership at the state code level in dealing with water quality and the technology that's out there right now. There's probably a point in time where one could argue the state code has not been as aggressive in their requirements and their protections of groundwater sources. That's beginning to change, and we're dealing with some language in the code right now that certainly predate all those advances. And so we will be sitting down in-house and talking about how we better marry what the health department has been able to champion and the health board has been able to do and what the state code is now allowing, because at the end of the day, it's really about being able to address some of these issues of groundwater and septic infiltration. And we'd all like to think that the solution is going to be we're going to extend public, you know, sewer infrastructure into these lower density, more remote subdivisions. And whereas that may be the ultimate goal, we need to have an interim step that's adaptable moving into the future. And some of these advanced systems appear to be a tool that we might be able to use. So, yeah, we're going to be updating the code. And the timing's perfect because a lot of these code provisions are going to be in front of the Planning Commission here this spring and summer. Our objective is to wrap these things up with the council this year.
One other question I wanted to ask you, and that is the Colby School application, basically to return the school to what it was before a school, and that was a bed and breakfast. Does that even come to Planning Commission, or is that just something that you could have approved? Basically, it was a pre-existing use.
That goes to the Planning Commission. It will be a conditional use permit. It's one of those uses that are actually allowed to be considered in the rural residential zone. Where we are with that right now is just the service provider notifications, you know, the affected entities, yet to be scheduled in front of the commission, but will be here coming up this spring. My guess, probably in March, early April.
Okay. Hey, Pat, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, other than if I could get some help kicking this cold that I seem to have gotten. The one thing that I would like just to hit one more time is on Tuesday night, the Planning Commission is going to hold a public hearing on the code changes for the basin and potentially forward a recommendation on our master plan development process. It would be great to have a room full of people in there to help us gauge if we're right, if we're close on this, if we're missing key pieces of what we should be reviewing when new development projects come through or rezones are proposed. We've done a number of work sessions on them, but really Tuesday night is going to be one of those key nights. There won't be a final decision. The council makes the final decision, but there could be a recommendation forwarded. And it's nice to have a good room of people to help us evaluate that.
Okay. Hey, Pat, thanks for your time.
All right. Have a good weekend. Bye.
That's Summit County Community Development Director Pat Pott. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:29. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Council met for a brief meeting yesterday. Joining us for his first council recap, I have Park City Council Member Max Doyle. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's see. First, can you talk to us how the city plans to move forward with the senior center? Of course, we've been reporting that they're a bit concerned that they think they have a valid lease to stay where they are.
Well, the lease hasn't really been a part of our conversation. That's a new development that has just recently kind of cropped up. We've been dealing with the seniors for 6 years. We've been working very closely with them on a mutually agreeable solution. We've had a couple hiccups along the way, but we're continuing down the path that we've been on for the last 6 years of trying to seek a solution for them that everybody can be happy with.
Yeah. So is the city attorney going to jump in here, though, and give us some kind of legal assessment about whether that lease is valid?
We haven't really gone down that road at all. It's never been part of the discussion for the 6 years we've been working together. We're still looking for a good location for the seniors to land. They've been asking for a long time for an improved facility. We're way down the road on this, and we are just continuing on that path.
Yesterday in your comments to council, you mentioned how recent school closures or delays kind of reminded you about the council's priorities, especially social equity. Talk a little bit more about what you were trying to convey there.
What I was trying to convey is that I think our critical priorities in Park City are on point. We had a school closure that affected parents around town. I'm an employer in town, and we had people with young kids who had to skip work that day. That's difficult for them, right? They only have so many days they can skip work. They're trying to make money. Proximity to their work is huge. We had a school closure because of snow in Salt Lake. For some of the younger kids, it was just a two-hour delay for the public schools. That's to get teachers here because they're living in Salt Lake. So I think our critical priorities are on point in our transportation and housing directions in particular. Proximity to work is huge for families being able to operate, right? So you have two working parents and you have a school delay or closure that at least one of them can't go to work that day. And some people are really working paycheck to paycheck to afford to live here. So it was really a comment about how we work with the surrounding community. We want to get as many people living as close to their work as possible. And I think that our priorities are on point.
The district also provides meals for about 25% of the students. And so when the schools are closed and the kids go hungry?
Well, I'm not sure that they go hungry. We're not providing meals to their home, and now their mom's at home or their dad's at home. So, that's news to me in terms of whether they go hungry at home. I'm not sure that that's the case.
You also mentioned that your child is taught by Janice Byler, the woman who was hit in the crosswalk there on the first day of Sundance. Do you think you're in position of influence now as a council member? Do you think that what can the city do to make things safer for pedestrians? And of course, we had just another accident reported there, a man in the hospital with serious injuries after he was hit by a van last night on Empire Avenue. I mean, he was there waiting at a bus stop.
Yeah. So to be clear, my son was taught by Janice Byler's daughter, Erin, and I got an update directly from her yesterday. Janice is starting to improve in measurable ways, which is really heartening to hear. My comments are more about, I wanted to give council an update because everybody was moved when she got hit in the crosswalk. She was in the crosswalk. She was trying to get to, I believe, Park City Mountain, where she works. And it was a personal story for me. You know, I know her daughter. I've had breakfast with her when we have their kids up at the resort skiing and stuff. So, the pedestrians getting hit in Park City is an emotional thing for me. I got the news this morning about this man who was hit last night, and it hits home because we want people using public transportation. We're pushing that. We had a study recently that we're looking through how to improve our bus stops, how to improve. You talked to Matt yesterday about that, I believe. And we're wanting to make the place safer. We want cars to be safer. We want people to be safer. So when people get hit, it really hits home.
So any decisions made, though, in terms of what we're moving forward with on our bus stops? I mean, I know people that ride the bus have lots of suggestions for you. One being it's like turn the bus stops around so the entrances are from behind so that people can stand and watch and then walk out around so that they're not splashed by all the snow slush and stuff like that.
Well, you and I live right by a bus stop where that can happen. I believe we talked about lighting. We talked about improving the size of the bus stops, the cleanliness of the bus stops. We've talked about the sidewalks, the accessibility. The list goes on and on and on. Ideally, we want those bus stops to be heavily used and as safe as possible.
So moving forward, though, I mean, were some decisions made, or is this all part of the joint conference that you'll have with planning vision with the county council.
I imagine it'll be part of the conference we have. We're going to take advice from JTAB. We're going to be discussing every element of this. But as you know, when you have this many variables, it's hard to say, yeah, we've made a clear decision about this bus stop right now. Last night's another reminder. We need to be on top of this and soon.
We also heard from local business owners who felt that Sundance attendance was down. As a business owner, I mean, what's your sense?
Well, I was at the restaurant board meeting yesterday, and what it sounded like to me was that some of the businesses on Main Street saw a little bit of a drop. At least that's what they're reporting. Businesses that are off Main reported, a little bump in sales. We were about flat there. We kind of tend to stay pretty flat at the corner store. So, I feel like maybe we were down a little bit in terms of foot traffic. It felt easier to get around town. I give our transportation department and the events department a lot of credit for the work they did. It felt smoother. I think everybody felt that. Was that a result of less people in town? I'm not sure. We're looking for the reports from Sundance, and we're going to look for some of our event staff to give us some more hard numbers.
And, I mean, I guess for a lot of people, maybe that's okay. I mean, there's certainly some people who may not have made as much money, but then for the rest of the community, it was a little bit more comfortable.
I think that it's hard for business owners that get used to double-digit growth for a decade to have a year where they're not growing that fast. It sometimes is a little bit of a shock, but I also think that we're doing really well here in Park City, and maybe a little bit more manageable Sundance wasn't such a bad thing this year. We don't know if it's a trend until we see year after year what happened. Occasionally you get a year where some people just decided to do something else this week or whatever.
The council is holding its annual retreat next week. Any issues that you're looking forward to diving into? I haven't seen the agenda yet.
I'm actually still, as they say, drinking from a fire hose coming into council. I'm really looking forward to my first retreat because I still have some questions about my role. I'm going to get some liaison roles that are going to be assigned to me. I'm looking forward to getting into that element of my new role. So for me, I'm just looking forward to my first retreat. It is earlier than we usually do it, so I've been trying to get up to speed really quickly. And, as you can notice here, I'm also trying to figure out how to give honest and open answers to questions without knowing exactly the detail that you may want. Some of it we just don't have. Some of it don't know what to say except for I'm looking forward to this next week because I think I'm going to come out of it feeling like I graduated my freshman year.
Okay. Anything else, Max, you wanted to bring up?
I just want to really reiterate, please be careful when you're out there on the streets. We appreciate you taking public transportation. That is a huge goal of ours. But when you're walking on the streets, especially in the wind and snow, you're looking for that dry patch to step on. You're also stepping into traffic, and people's windshields may be a little icy or something. So just be really careful out there. We do not want to see anybody else getting hit by cars.
Okay. Hey, Max Doyle, Park City Council member. Thanks for your time. Christian Center of Park City has brought David Hempton, Dean of the Harvard Divinity School, to town. He'll be presenting tomorrow, 6:30 at the Christian Center. He and the director of the Christian Center, Rob Harder, join me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, David, tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, who you are and what you do, I mean, as Dean of the Harvard Divinity School.
Well, Leslie, thanks for having me. So, as your listeners can hear, I have an Irish accent. So I grew up in Belfast during the Troubles, actually, back in the early 1970s. And got interested in religion and political culture because you had to be interested in it. It was happening all around you. And ended up doing a PhD in that subject, got into academic life, spent the first half of my career in the United Kingdom, Northern Ireland, and then came to the USA in 1998 to Boston University and then on to Harvard. And now, for my very many sins, I'm the Dean of the Harvard Divinity School.
And so the Divinity School, tell me about that. I mean, what you train priests?
Well, the Divinity School is one of the 10 graduate schools at Harvard, so it's a big part of the university. We have about 400 students, and our students come sometimes to prepare for ministry, sometimes for academic life, sometimes for NGOs and humanitarian causes, sometimes for the arts and literature and filmmaking. So it's quite a range of people. And because it's a non-sectarian divinity school, we have over 30 different religious traditions represented among our students. And about a fifth of them come from different countries all over the world. So it's a very international and eclectic place.
Well, the title of your talk is Religious Freedom Under Attack and Does It Matter? How would you answer those questions? I mean, is religious freedom under attack?
It's a great question. Because my main fear about religion being under attack operates around violence, I'm particularly attuned to, our religious traditions under threat in terms of violence or gun violence or church burnings or synagogue attacks or Islamophobia or hate crimes. So, and I do think there's some evidence that those things are on the increase. I think in terms of religious freedom generally, I still think that the United States is a great, exceptional and wonderful example of the separation of church and state, and the First Amendment protections are still very strong, that we don't have an established church. We don't have the government telling us what to believe or not to believe. And those are extremely precious freedoms and are quite unusual around the world, often where there are state churches or where there is religious persecution of minorities. So it's, in many ways, it's a good news story, but it's one that, religious freedom is something we shouldn't take for granted. We need to keep watching it and make sure that we appreciate it, because it is a great gift.
Yeah. Well, certainly, what we've heard over the last decade, I mean, some would argue that we are under attack by our religious institutions. I mean, of course, the horrendous child abuse cover up by the Catholic Church. So who's attacking whom?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I do agree that religious institutions have not covered themselves with glory over the past 20 years in the United States. On the other hand, I do think that religious institutions do a remarkable amount of good work around communities. I mean, this one's an example, I think, of the Christian Center in Park City that, it has all kinds of social programs to help people and to, make the community a bit richer and more cohesive, taking care of people. So it is, I saw it in Northern Ireland very, very close up, sectarian violence was a terrible thing, but there was also just wonderful examples of, compassion, generosity, forgiveness, mercy, justice. So you're right. It's a two-edged thing. And what we're trying to do at the Divinity School is invest more in the better angels of religious traditions and try and minimize the lesser things and traditions that we don't like.
Yeah, and this isn't something that you would know about, but right now at the Utah legislature, there's a bill under consideration. It's known as House Bill 90. Basically, it would remove the priest-penitent privilege when it comes to reporting abuse cases. Basically, the bill would require that a priest, a bishop, or any other clergy who receives a disclosure of abuse needs to turn around and report that to law enforcement to investigate. And if that clergy member didn't, they could face a misdemeanor charge and would also allow for the possibility of a civil litigation by a victim. The bill's sponsor says she is not attacking religion. She's looking to protect children. Yeah. I mean, as somebody, that thinks about this, I mean, what side would you take?
Yeah, well, I'm not familiar with this particular Utah case, but basically I'm in favor of as much transparency in religious traditions, as much investment in justice causes. I mean, we have had conferences at the Divinity School where, victims of sexual abuse from religious traditions have told their stories very painfully. And these are lifelong scars and deep wounds in people's lives. So we need to stop that. So without knowing the particulars of this case, my general instincts around religion and the traditions is the more transparency, the more justice, the more honesty, the more decency, the better for everyone. So I don't think churches have got a lot to fear from that. I mean, I can obviously see that there are, you know, privileged relationships that, that priests or lawyers or doctors have with their patients or with their congregants. But there are some things that ought never to be tolerated, and there are some things that we all must unite to resist. So my sentiments really are with them on those sides of the issues.
Yeah, well, I guess, I mean, it comes down to, should religious leaders have special protections, or should they? We hold them to the same standards as we do teachers and doctors, which if they do hear of some kind of abuse happening, that they are required to.
Yeah, well, I support that. Yeah. I don't think that religious professionals should have special privileges to protect unwholesome and nasty acts.
Yeah. And then recently, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints were accused of stockpiling $100 billion that this whistleblower said should have been used for charitable purposes. Instead, it's building up a surplus that has even been used to prop up some of its commercial interests. So this would come down, again, to that, you know, people support religious institutions with their hard-earned dollars to do good work, and then you hear about something like this, and you question, I mean, again, should we be giving religious institutions, you know, the tax breaks that they receive when they're not doing what they are supposed to be doing?
Yeah, well, what you're pointing out is that the three great weaknesses of religious traditions are power, sex, and money, and you've hit all three, I think, and So I'm not, I don't know the particulars of this case, and it's always difficult pontificating about things you don't know anything about. But basically, it's no secret that religious institutions throughout history have had all kinds of secrecies and bad practices around money, and I don't like that one little bit. So the answer to your question is, you know, I do think that money that's donated for religious and charitable causes, that's where it should be spent, and that's where it does the most good. And I do think, you know, with someone here from the center here in Park City, I'm sure you would agree that, as with the Divinity School, we publish our finances every year and full disclosure, every penny of what we do with it, and the financial aid we give students and the good we try and do with that money. So I think it's very important to have full disclosure and honest disclosure around money. Mm. There's no other, there's no argument against that.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, so again, you'll be speaking. Rob, you want to give us the details about, and people need to RSVP?
Absolutely. So we've reached capacity for this event Saturday night, which is wonderful. Now, we are taking our waiting list, so you can still sign up because, you know, often people don't show up, even if they've RSVP'd. So please sign up for a waiting list. It's 6:30 Saturday at the Christian Center, and it's going to be fantastic. You already got a little bit of a hearing from David Hempton today, and he's a fantastic speaker, and I just encourage you to come out.
Yeah. How many people can you take?
We have a capacity about a little over 200.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we've already maxed out.
Wow, impressive.
That's great.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. Big speaker. And then how did you bring him here?
I got to thank Jim and Susan Swartz. They're really the ones that have a connection with the Harvard Divinity School. Susan's actually on the board there, and they were able to recruit him to come out. And if you remember, a couple of years ago, we brought a couple of people like Hawa Ibrahim that I believe you got a chance to meet, and we brought her to speak. So that's one of our goals at the Christian Center, actually, is to bring speakers every year as part of this Harvard speaking series, because there's so many great speakers and authors and academic leaders, you know, that can provide so many different perspectives, and often in Park City, Utah, feels a long way away from Cambridge, so we like to, through the Swartz's help, bring them here to Park City.
Well, and such relevant topic, so appreciate your time and coming in this morning.
Thanks so much for having me. I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.